S-R-N. Welcome to the Questo Show. Hey, thank you. Welcome to a bonus episode of Cinema Crespo Diso. This is the Florida Film Festival 2014 midweek recap of sorts, in case you couldn't tell by the title of this episode, which just happens to be Florida Film Festival 2014 recap.
Midweek recap of sorts.
I feel like I kind of wasted 10 seconds of Irwin's life right there. That's the voice of Drewster Cogburn. Drew, how's it going?
I was just thinking we should waste some more time.
I can do that. I can waste more time.
Can we? Let's keep doing it. Oh, yep, chicken. Got anything else?
No, I too love wasting time.
Do you? How about this? This is for our guest Aaron Weiss.
Hey.
Thank you for the warm welcome.
Yeah, thank you for coming back on, dude. How's it going, man?
Doing well. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah. What, 2 weeks?
About 2 weeks.
Everything's changed. Everything has changed.
The world.
My whole world has been turned upside down.
Yeah, everything. My world was destroyed, and now I live in this new world. And
you look like you're doing well.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, considering that I came out of the other side in one piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You too.
You should come out the other side with a haircut.
I went through hell and back.
Hell and back.
Yeah.
Apparently, when you go to hell and back or through other dimensions, there are no barbershops. he's looking spiffy. He's looking tight.
I was going to get a haircut last week, but I was at the St. Pete Grand Prix the previous weekend.
Oh, the St. Pete Grand Prix. I was in town once for that accidentally.
I was sleeping on that couch.
Because I have spiky hair, there are little spots of skin on my scalp available for the sun.
Oh, yeah.
So I got sunburned on my scalp. Nowhere else on my body.
Oh,
so
annoying.
I called my girl, and I was like, listen, it's probably best that you don't run that comb through my hair.
That's funny. Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on. You were on our Florida Film Fest 2013 recap.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're on our 2014 one. That makes this a tradition.
Yeah.
A trend.
We're going 2015.
There's going to be no reason to stop this, if you ask me. I think for now on, when we do Florida Film Festival recap, you got to be here, dude. Even if you're not in town for the fest, you got to Skype drive in.
I can always Skype in.
By then...
It sounds like a sexual position, but it's not.
It does.
By then, we will be set up in a studio. What we can do it there, we'll be set up in a studio where we'll be able to take calls, Skype calls. We'll actually be broadcasting a lot of shows live. Mm-hmm. That'll be possible.
Let's do it.
Sure, yes.
I love it.
Awesome. So that's how things start, people. Just do it once, see how it works, do it again if it does, and next thing you know, straight on tradition.
You'll rinse and repeat.
Yeah. It's like shampoo. So Florida Film Festival, it's here. You just finished with another film festival.
Correct.
The Gasparilla Film Festival.
Yes.
So people, a lot of people here listening to the show, not in Florida, not aware of what the Gasparilla Film Festival would be. You want to go ahead and let them know, fill them in on the 411 on that little festival over there.
Sure, the Gasparilla Film Festival is, this year was its eighth year, and it's more of a festival that's meant to try to generate more film production in the Tampa Bay area.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they do. It is an international film festival. They get films from all over the world.
Nice.
They're very into a lot of ethnic and cultural films,
mm-hmm.
But they do have plenty of independent films. Their programming stepped up a little bit from last year. A lot of the films were just awful. There's maybe one or two good films I saw. This year, there's a lot of overlap. There's a lot of films from Gasparilla that are at the Florida Film Festival this year.
And good ones? Is that a good thing? Does that mean the Florida Film Festival is going down or Gasparilla is getting better?
Florida Film Festival is definitely not going down.
Okay.
Gasparilla has gotten better.
Getting a little better.
They still need to work on their opening night films. 2 years in a row, they've had duds. Last year, they had Empire Records. They had the world premiere of Empire Records.
Mm-hmm.
And it went straight to VOD.
Empire Records?
Empire State. Empire State, yeah. Yes. No.
That's with The Rock.
With The Rock, yeah. It was a decent film, but...
Definitely a direct-to-video movie, for sure.
And
the Hemsworth is in that, too, right?
Hemsworth is in
Hemsworth. But not the one everyone likes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And the opening film this past year was... Or this past... two weekends ago, it was There's Always Woodstock, and it's about this girl who gets fired from her job at a record company, and her parents left her a house in Woodstock, and so she flees there, and she wants to start her singing-songwriter career, and it has some interesting people in it. Katie Sagal is in it,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A few others, and it was bad.
all right.
It was whiny and just skip it. It was a B film rom com. Something you're gonna see deep in Netflix for about a month and a half.
Yeah.
If you see it, skip it.
Oh, there you go.
If you see the title, skip it.
Netflix forewarning. What's it called? We always have Woodstock.
There's always Woodstock.
All right, so stay away from that one on Netflix. Empire State, though, that's.
But do watch.
So was Empire State better than?
It was. It was much more entertaining.
Ah, man, that sucks.
Yes. Yeah.
That stinks.
That's what can I do?
Hey, it's a film festival. You're at the whims of the program director.
Yeah. Well, some festivals are markets, and some festivals are showcases.
True. Absolutely.
So,
true. Yes. Your big ones like your Sundances and mm-hmm. Toronto International.
People
Telluride.
Are there to get their movies sold.
Yes, that's where. Executives go with,
yes.
with the checkbooks mm-hmm. and stuff.
Correct.
Places more like the Florida Film Festival or Gasparilla, mm-hmm. that's where people go to
the
like...
The artists will go to get the name out there. Executives may not really come typically, or they might come to do an educational panel or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah. They might get invited to come out, but they're not going to the festival like, this is where I go to buy movies.
They left a checkbook at home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they certainly did. But, you know, if you're an artist there, you could meet one of these executives and then that guy can go home and get his checkbook.
Well,
I mean, it's a possibility.
Well, Florida Film Festival, they've been doing this for
23 years,
and they are a Academy a qualifier for the short films, both animated and short and documentary.
Yeah, movies that play there. It makes them.
So short wise, this is a very respected festival.
It is even on a national level. I've read articles that talked about the best film festivals in the country, mm-hmm. and Florida Film Festival comes up pretty regularly.
Oh, absolutely. If I was a filmmaker, I would submit here every year. This is a fantastic, a lot of value whether you're a filmmaker mm-hmm. or if you're a spectator.
I remember 4 years ago, I think maybe my first fest that I went to. One of the shorts programs, mm-hmm. and Sam Levine was there because he was there for one of his short films, and he got Seth MacFarlane in it and everything. And I was like, it felt like cheating. It's like, you know, these other people work really hard to make this movie. Sam Levine's gonna show up with his Seth MacFarlane movie, and blow everyone away. The sound of it's like a professional stand-up comic showing up at open mic night.
Well, they have to have their prestige films to bring in the crowds.
True.
So, absolutely. Like, I remember, I think it was 08, or maybe it was 010. No, mm-hmm. 010. Well, technically 010. Yeah. They had the Swedish version of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and it was sold out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is before the English one is even a twinkle in your eye.
That's just to bring people in to make the money.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally. All right, so what else did you see besides the opening night movie? What did you see at Gasparilla? Anything that overlapped with the Florida Film? Yeah, you said movies overlap. So what
absolutely.
Overlapped?
Well, my favorite movie of Gasparilla International Film Festival that is also here at the mm-hmm. Florida Film Festival is Winter in the Blood.
Okay.
Is adapted from a book. I don't remember the author's name. Mm-hmm. It was a book from the 70s. It's a Native American author.
Okay.
And it was very... it really was shot like a novel. It was a... how should I explain? It was the narrative is going back and forth. Mm. You're confused because the main character is an alcoholic, Native American. Well, he's half Native American, half white. So he's dealing with a lot of identity issues. He's not really welcome in either side in some ways. And he's looking for his wife that's left him.
Okay.
And in the meantime, on the not really even the road, but just his journey to get there, he's having his own... He thinks he may have had sexual affairs and other things going on, and he kind of just is this hapless, wanderer.
Hmm.
But it was a really beautiful film. It felt like you were reading a novel.
Interesting.
And I really enjoyed it.
Do you know when that was played at the Florida Film Fest? Is there still a screening of that to come?
There was a screening this afternoon, which was Wednesday.
Okay.
I don't know if there's going to be any more.
Oh, okay. So
but I do recommend it. Keep it watch out. I think that's going to be something you're going to see a lot in the festival circuit.
Okay. It's something that's going to pop up down the road.
Yeah, I think so. I'm sure it's going to be on Netflix. It's a good movie.
Winter in the Blood. Keep an eye out for that one.
Mm-hmm.
What else did you see?
The only other film that I saw that overlapped mm-hmm. was a movie called Copenhagen.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the one where it's like a couple of young 18-year-olds or uh-huh. something on different paths in their lives, yes. meet each other up in Copenhagen.
Correct. Yeah, one of the gentlemen is looking for his father in Copenhagen.
Okay.
And they run into a young girl mm-hmm. whose age kind of tends to go down further. And she seems to get younger and younger, her age, as the movie progresses.
Interesting.
And but she ends up being the kind of like the muse. She knows the city. Mm-hmm. They're mostly just Americans, and and that becomes a little relationship, not even a sexual relationship, but a very interesting one. I didn't really care for the movie, but it was entertaining.
Okay.
But it kind of felt like it had this faux empathy in it.
Like it was striving for something that it wasn't. Exactly. It was trying to be a little heavier, yeah. had more gravitas than it really earned.
Yeah, I don't see where all the hoopla is.
Gotcha.
So.
Gotcha. All right, well, there you go. That was the films that overlap with Gasparilla.
Mm-hmm. I do know the names of the other ones that I hadn't seen. Mm-hmm. There was Medea's. And I lied. I only remember Medea's, but there's another movie that also overlapped. I forgot. Maybe two more.
Every time I see that Medea's, I'm like, Tyler Perry's gonna be at the festival? What's going on? Totally not a.
I thought the same thing. Yeah, right. That would be a big draw.
It would be.
Yeah.
Tyler Perry's Medea's at the Florida Film Festival. People would be like, I'm there. Shit, I'd go. Just look at the guy in the face and be like, you're a monster. You're a monster. All right, so Florida Film Festival. Opening night movie? I don't even remember what the opening night movie
was. It was a trip to Italy, which I did not get to see, mm-hmm. but I really want to see it because it's sequel to The Trip, which was...
The Steve Coogan and what's
Michael Winterbottom
his name?
Film. I always forget his name, too.
Yeah, the other guy. I think he's popular over there in the UK.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch that, The Trip? You ever get around to watching that one, Drew?
The
one where the two guys are just going, it's Steve Coogan and his buddy, and they're just going from like hotel to hotel. And
they're on a food tour.
Yeah, it's a food tour.
They just get lit on wine the whole time.
Yes. And they keep throwing Michael Caine impressions at each other.
Uh-huh, I saw it 3 times, and I love it.
Damn, really?
I have my review on my website, and I think it's a fantastic.
Cinemafunk.com.
Yeah, cinemafunk.com. Just type in The Trip, and I'm sure you'll find it. Fantastic movie. I'm so glad they did a sequel.
Yeah.
I've heard good, great things about this sequel.
Even though it is a sequel. It's a comedy sequel, you know.
It can go either way, but.
No, comedy sequels cannot go either way. Comedy sequels can only be worse.
Bad.
They're 100% bad. Of the time worse.
Ace Ventura 2, When Nature Calls, is
worse.
Just as good as the first one.
No,
it's not.
Okay. No, it's not.
We have to agree to disagree.
We will agree to disagree on that one because Ace Ventura, the first one, is imminently watchable, whereas that second one is just.
No, I could watch either or.
Well, I mean, I could too. I'm always going to take Cannibal Corpse over.
Any day of the week.
Exactly. So you can't even point to anything. to him being shit out of a rhino. That is a brilliant scene.
Yeah.
Way off course.
Yes.
And I do got to admit, though, I was really looking forward to the trip, and I love Michael Winterbottom.
Mm-hmm.
That movie disappointed me a little bit. I couldn't. Maybe I'll give it another shot. I'll watch it again. Yeah, it's disappointing.
I think it's
maybe it was built up a little too much for me because I was waiting for it for a while.
You know, there's a lot of subtleties. There's a lot of Samuel Taylor Coleridge. So if you knew some of his famous poems, some of the movie is going to expound on.
Yeah.
You know. That's just me getting all intellectual on this.
Well, maybe if they handed out placards in the theater in the lobby with, like, here's some poem readings
they
that you can do right before the movie. Like,
they should have had a Criterion essay beforehand.
I do love those Criterion essays.
I
mean, read that shit and sit down and watch the movie.
Yeah.
Your mind will expand.
Absolutely.
So that is a great opening night movie. Mm-hmm. Florida Film Festival usually very good with their opening night movies.
Well, last year they had 20 Feet from Stardom, which won the documentary Academy Award.
Yeah. It did win, right?
It did win.
I totally wanted Active Killing to win.
I think it's... It's
too heavy.
What
too
we want
heavy.
To win and should win.
Two different
and
things.
And then what does win all three different things.
Yeah, very good. Very good. early Saturday, we saw the first documentary of the day, Drew and I. Did you get a chance to see Mission Congo, Aaron?
I did not.
Oh boy, what a movie. What an interesting movie. And then some interesting Googling afterwards, too. Mission Congo, for those who don't know, which is pretty much everyone, because these are little movies that haven't really been released. It's a documentary about Pat Robertson from the 700 Club.
He's the devil.
And apparently how he's the devil. He would go on TV and raise a ton of money. In 1994, there's whole Rwandan genocide thing. You know, go see Hotel Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And then come back and listen to this. He set up, like, Operation Blessing is what it was called. Bought a lot of planes. raised a lot of money through his television station, the Christian Broadcasting Network, and through his viewership. And he said, we're sending all these medical teams over to help with the cholera. We're sending all this medicine. We're sending this. We're sending that. And then the documentary interviews all these other people who are actually there working in the refugee camps in 94. And they're all like, we didn't see these doctors. They sent over a bunch of Tylenol. We don't know where this money went. And then they interviewed these other people who were working with Operation Blessing, and they're like, oh, all this money and the resources were being used for a diamond mining operation 800 miles away from the refugee camps.
Why am I not surprised?
It's not surprising. It's sickening, but even when I read the description, when I watched the movie, when I talk about it now, it's not. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense.
It does.
So, of course, the movie is like just going to get you all riled up and pissed off, and it's well made.
It sounds like something that's going to end up on HBO. HBO's been in the past has end up getting a lot of the documentaries at Florida Film Festival on their doc system.
Yeah, they do. It's like I've seen it both ways. I've even seen movies at the Florida Film Festival. It pops up like the HBO documentaries logo. I'm like, hey, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this one, I wouldn't be surprised if it does. I kind of wrote this in my review. Blackfish. Mm-hmm. All right, movie about killer whales in captivity. People flipped out, up in arms, protesting SeaWorld. SeaWorld attendance for the first quarter down 13% from last year. Mm-hmm. Mission Congo, movie about actual human beings. I bet you there wouldn't be a goddamn nothing. I bet you the exact same people.
It's not in their backyard.
No.
It's not in their backyard.
No, let's be honest about it. It's about a bunch of brown people across the ocean. They don't. Why would Americans give a shit about that? You know?
I already saw Hotel Rwanda. Why would I need to see its documentary?
Yes.
I know it's awful.
Thank you.
That's how it's going to be.
And then the same reaction we had where, Pat Robertson, he's evil the whole time. Well, in our cynical society, I get it. I don't need to see this movie. There's nothing I can do about it. Duh. Oh, but we're going to go protest SeaWorld because, you know, the fishies are in a tank. And the fish, we care so much about the fish.
Well, it wasn't a fish, it's a mammal.
It's a porpoise. It's Ventura.
Both documentaries are about sad things.
Extremely sad things. And I just wonder if Mission Congo, which is a very well-made movie, if it would be able to mobilize people in the same way. And I don't think it will. And then, like I mentioned, I did some Googling. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Google.com, everyone.
Google. I went to
Bing.com to find Google.com.
Also, when I do my binging through Google, I'll go to Google and I'll put in the Bing.com and then I'll my search in it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did some Googling. This documentary. Well, first off, you know, this all happened in the 90s, and then part of the documentary was out in the late 90s. An independent body investigated all the allegations and they determined there's fraud and malfeasance and recommended that the state DA prosecute. And then, of course, you know, Pat Robertson's buddies with all the people in state DA and politics and everything. And at that time, he was very, very powerful in 98. So they didn't even investigate. They didn't prosecute. DA did nothing. They squashed the whole thing.
Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, right, no, not surprising at all. So these are actually old allegations that have now just been repackaged and put into a nice, you know, nice documentary form, and it's put out there again so people can see this again. Now with the coda of and in the late 90s he uses connections to get away with it, right?
Yeah.
And all this shit is still going on. The Guardian. Someone in The Guardian wrote an article about the documentary because it debuted in September at Toronto. Mm-hmm. October, The Guardian wrote an article. Well, someone for The Guardian wrote an article, and it just recapped their thing. Just the facts as presented in the movie. Not even saying the facts, just what's in the movie. Presented everything in there. I don't know what happened. Robertson's people, the Christian Broadcasting Network people, Operation Blessing, still in operation. They came down hard on The Guardian to the point where The Guardian put out an apology and a retraction.
What?
Yes, and then Operation Blessing, in response to this movie, put out a huge rebuttal, saying no, we did this, we did that, saying over and over again, we have records of this, we have records that we did that, we have records that we did this. Of course, they didn't provide copies of the records for any of this stuff, and said we have records that says we sent these teams and that teams. They were like, the movie interviewed this person who said he was a pilot with our operation. We have no record of this person. You know, everything was we have no record of this, or we have records.
Yeah. I mean, SeaWorld did the same thing with Blackfish. You know, it's you know, the PR spin.
Well, no. Well, SeaWorld SeaWorld did the same thing that Pat Robertson did, where they declined to participate in the documentary. Mm-hmm. With Pat Robertson, it wouldn't have helped to this cause to participate.
Of course, yeah.
SeaWorld, it might have helped them if they participated with Blackfish and let them see what they actually.
Every time, bonus Juicer.
I hate it when he goes to some bonus episodes. I really do.
How often do you guys have bonus episodes?
We've been doing them like almost once a week. Like maybe we try to do like at least three a month.
So why don't you just call it a new episode?
Because of the bonus episode.
Oh, okay.
Because they're not all movie related.
Oh, you know. Well, you could call them a bogus episode.
The bogus episodes.
I'm going to have to put my copyright on that.
We do the Cinema Funk copyright. We do the Crespo Disco once a month, which is a music episode.
Oh, okay.
I do the CCN, Cinema Crespo Disco News. I mean, it kind of changes every month. But that's one where I talk about everything other than movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do Dr. Drew.
Dr. Drew.
Dr. Drew. And we do a Dr. Drew's 2 cents. And,
okay.
And it's an episode a month where he gets to talk about whatever he wants. And it's not about movies. So we just trying to throw different things
tune
out
in.
There. Yeah, exactly.
Definitely tune in.
So this is one of our rare movie-centric bonus episodes. Kind of strange.
Bogus episode.
And since it's a bonus episode, this isn't going to count towards the overall
bogus
score. But we're going to do some Film Fest trivia. So I got a trivia question. Go ahead and buzz in by saying your name.
Okay.
All right. And then I'm just going to just add this shit up and we'll see what happens.
All right.
All right. You guys ready?
Going down, Drew.
All right.
It's all Film Fest related stuff. So here we go. Number one. The New York Film Festival. The Toronto International Film Festival. The Berlin International Film Festival. Which is the largest based on attendance?
Berlin. Oh, excuse me. Aaron.
Aaron.
Berlin. What is Berlin?
Berlin is correct.
I'm already doing better than I did last time.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal.
I had goose eggs.
Number two. A 2013 study found how many active film festivals worldwide?
Drew?
29. No.
Is this like...
It's open.
Is this like Price is Right, where you just do number one, and then...
You gotta nail it.
Okay.
You gotta get into that.
Aaron? I'm gonna go with 3,800.
Oh, close! 3,000!
No one gets over. 3,000!
800 over. Number three. The first major film fest was the Venice Film Festival in 1932. How much did milk cost per gallon in 1932?
Drew.
5 cents. Wrong.
Does it have to be in the currency?
It has to be exact.
Does it have to be in the right currency?
We're doing dollars.
Okay, dollars.
Yeah, not Venice. It's not Libra.
I'm going to go with Aaron.
Aaron.
7 cents.
44 cents a gallon.
That seems a lot to me.
It does.
Yeah, you got to think of the averages. Number four. That's also right after the market crash, you know. 32.
Classic things, market
things
crashing.
Were bad in the 30s. They're bad. Dust Bowl. Number four.
That was Venice and the Dust Bowl are on other sides of the world.
Yeah,
totally.
The Cannes Film Festival is held every year in which city located on the French Riviera?
Drew? Cannes.
That is correct.
I let you have that one.
Seriously?
Number five. Which of the following is not an award given out at Cannes? The Palme d'Or, the Grand Prix, the Tasse d'Oro.
Drew. The Tasse de whatever the hell you said.
The Tasse d'Oro is correct. It's Spanish for a cup of gold.
You just gave me that. That was for Drew. You gave the... Okay, I'll take it.
Oh, I see. Oh,
yeah. Aw, okay. He,
that worked
like
well,
that.
Huh?
Chris gave me the point, and he just switched
I just swapped the
names.
Scoreboard
over.
Number six. That's where number six. Here we go. The New York Film Festival started in 1963. What was the unemployment rate in America in 1963?
Aaron. 1963. Probably about 4.5%.
Incorrect.
Drew.
8%. 5.5%. Number seven.
I was close.
I just like guessing.
Because I knew there was a cyclical downturn in 1962, but it happened in I know that from my master's degree.
There you go.
Awesome. I studied that stuff.
You know the upturns and downturns? Number seven. Here we go. Clerks, Primer, Hustle and Flow, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Memento, Sex Lives and Videotape, Blood Simple, El Mariachi, Pie, Run Loader Run. These movies all won awards at which?
Aaron, Sundance.
Sundance is correct.
Woo! Didn't even let you finish your sentence.
That's kind of the point. You guys are allowed to jump in early, you know. Number 8. The San Francisco International Film Festival started in 1950.
Drew.
4. Wrong.
Aaron. 7.
Correct.
Yes.
That was just a guess. Always go with 7.
All right, we got 2 left. Aaron
seven
is up.
7 is my seed.
3-2. Here we go. 7 is good. 1957. In 2012, the Toronto International Film Festival screened 272 films over 11 days. True or false?
Drew.
True.
That is incorrect.
Oh!
Aaron.
No, can't be answered. They screened 372 films over 11 days. That's it.
I'm guessing that includes shorts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Just sounds like an inflated number, in my opinion.
Well, it's like a Florida Film Fest. They show 170 movies this year. Yeah. I mean, you know, 60 of them are shorts. And finally, number 10. Which is the oldest of these three? The Florida Film Festival, Miami International Film Festival, or the Sarasota Film Festival?
Aaron. Miami International.
Miami International is correct. Aaron, good job.
I'm taking it away.
Taking it for the world.
I think it's the first time I won on Crespo D.
No, oh, really?
Yeah.
Just pretty good, man.
Can be.
Yeah, can be.
Not today.
But when he feels like it.
I still love you, Drew.
As he caresses my shoulder oh so gently.
That was the winner's caress.
Yes.
Is what that was.
Awesome.
So we were talking, all right, Mission Congo. Are people going to care? Probably not. But it's a great movie. People should see it. It's definitely going to be on the Netflix or, you know, a CNN, like, you know, hopefully the Blackbird or something. So people should definitely watch it.
I wrote it down.
Oh, good. And what was the documentary? Not the documentary. Yeah, what was the short? That was when we
saw... Was it the girl with the war?
The girl with the war. Not anymore. We saw like a 10, 11-minute short about a girl who's a war photojournalist in Syria. Mm-hmm. Where she was, 21, 22 or something?
Yeah,
maybe
something
she's
like that.
In her 20s, and, you know, she's just walking around with a film crew in Syria, and like, look, this is my city, this is Aleppo, which is the biggest city in Syria, and it's completely obliterated, you know, everything's just horrible, thanks to our president, or whatever the guy, the dictator, Abbas, whatever his name is. And they follow him around, and some other dude, they follow her and some dude, and they just talk about, you know, a couple of their stories about the war in Syria and how they're struggling to just get by. Things used to be cool there. Now, obviously,
so it's
not.
Very uplifting.
Oh,
very
totally. Uplifting. 100%.
It's definitely the type of thing where it's like people should be able to see this because it brings home what's going on over there. Right now, you see Syria on the news. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, it's just a war zone. I can't relate to that.
Yeah.
But when you watch this documentary and you see this guy, he leads the camera around a corner and he points down the street. The streets are empty, you know, and everything's just destroyed. And he goes, that's the city center right there. And it's the middle of the day. He goes, that's the city center right there. There's no one there. Imagine New York City being like that. You know, imagine any city where the city center is just ghost town. Yeah. And then meanwhile, while he's doing that, they're pointing around the corner, you can hear like, pew, the gun shots. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Scary, dude. People need to see stuff like that because it brings home what's really going on over there. Then at the end, they have like a kitten or they have a cat. And like, look, see, Syria, we have cats. At least tell the Americans that we have cats and they can come save the cats. But they're like, put this on YouTube. Put this cat on YouTube, the Syrian cat. And it'll get millions of hits, and then people start caring about Syria because they'll see we have cats. They don't care about us, but maybe they'll care for cats. Yeah. And, you know, why is it funny? Because it's true. He's absolutely
right.
So hopefully someone will, like, hashtag Syrian cat on that short film and on YouTube, and people will start watching. That's actually a pretty good movie. Not anymore. Not that long.
Nope. Okay. It's only like 10 minutes.
Yeah. So that was the first movie we saw Saturday. What did you see first on Saturday?
On Saturday, I saw For Rev.
All right.
This is actually a very tolerable romantic comedy road movie.
Uh-huh.
An actress, a struggling actress, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're always.
Most of them are struggling somehow or another.
Yeah. If they're worth making a movie about, the struggle.
Yeah, she stumbles. She brings a man home, but she stumbles into her neighbor's apartment instead of hers.
Mm-hmm.
But he's cool with it, you know. And the next morning, they end up not sleeping together because they overhear him on the phone saying disparaging things about her, and she ends up like just sending him home.
Right.
But the next day, that you know, she comes in. Oh, I'm so sorry. And they end up going on a road trip. He's picking up his sister from college in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way, they admit that you know they liked each other, and they end up getting engaged. Yeah.
All right.
And at the same time, the sister that he picked up just got dumped by her boyfriend, who was very good friends with the main male character.
Okay.
And she ends up, they say, hey, have fun. You know, just got dumped, have fun. Then the next morning, she's missing.
She went and had too much fun.
Yeah, so they're looking for him. And it's actually a very tolerable, very interesting way that they want to look at how the millennial generation looks at marriage. You know, in this day and age, any male or female can get married, but any, you know, gay women don't have that opportunity. And all the, it doesn't even say that out loud. It doesn't even point to it.
It's
just
allegorical.
But it's there.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. Very unconventional, very unpredictable. A lot of good laughs. Some very interesting cinematography. Almost like Wes Anderson jokes come in, and it's only used, they use cinematography to land the jokes. I really enjoyed it.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Right. Forev. So with that one, if that's on a Netflix, because that's the thing, most of these movies,
a lot of these movies will be on Netflix.
That is a thing. Over the years, I've noticed a good majority of the movies that I've seen at the film festival end up on a Netflix instant within a year or so.
So if your film isn't purchased but and for limited or wide release, look at Netflix as your next form of
Netflix and VOD is good too. Sometimes these guys they just get good VOD deals getting piped into everyone's home.
Even selling your movie on Amazon Prime. Or whatever Amazon
they have. Out there, right?
Yeah.
It's out there. All right, cool. Very good. On Saturday, after Mission Congo, Drew and I followed up with another documentary. We saw a lot of documentaries. Followed up with the movie The Front Man. You remember that one, Drew?
Yes.
You know what this one's about, Aaron? Did you read the synopsis on this
one? I probably did, and I smoke a lot of weed, so I probably forgot.
Drummer was there, wasn't he?
Yes, the drummer was there in attendance. Yes. Some long-haired, hippie-looking dude who's actually kind of seemed like a nice guy. He's a funny guy.
Enough.
Yeah. The Front Man's a documentary about a dude in New Jersey who started a band in 1982, 84, something like that.
84 is a good year.
Yeah, 84 is a pretty good year. Right? You know about 84.
I do.
And the name of the band was what? Loaded Poets?
Yes.
Loaded Poets.
Still is.
Name of the band still is Loaded Poets. The band's still the same members. Mm-hmm. They've been trucking this whole time, playing bars. Pretty much bars. Playing bars all over New Jersey. Pretty much central New Jersey. Yeah. And then just cranking out album after album after album of, like, 80s. Pretty much 80s rock. And the whole movie is called The Front Man because it follows around the singer. Mm-hmm. His name's Jim Wood. Mm-hmm. And he's one of these guys where, he doesn't want to be a great musician, doesn't want to be a great singer. He wants to be a great rock star.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be famous. You know, that's the end game. It doesn't even matter if it's going to be... I mean, yeah, sure, he seems to enjoy music and he enjoys what he's doing. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, for him, you know, doesn't even have to be music.
Yeah, no.
It could be anything.
He just wants to be a front man.
He just wants to be loved and adored
Well,
by
in America,
the world.
You could actually have no talent and be famous.
Yeah.
You see it all the time.
Absolutely. So that's the movie. The movie is about him wanting to be famous. And at the same time, it's about him and his wife and how... like, they don't have kids. At first, like, we don't want to have kids. We're irresponsible people. And then that they're like, we do want to have kids. And they do have a kid. And the kid fucking grows up. The documentary ends up spanning, like, 15 years.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how long it spanned.
Yeah, it just kept going. It was incredible.
And they had all the footage from all those
years? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's the weird part.
That's the thing. They started doing something. This guy's friend started filming him. I'm not even sure when, because they didn't give you a year.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't pinpoint when it started. They just started filming this guy. It could have been last week, for all you know.
Yeah.
And then they're like, all right, here's a journey, and it just keeps fucking going and going. Mm. And then you don't even really realize it until they have the kid.
Yeah.
And then you get to the kid's 10th birthday, and then the kid's like in the cheerleading outfit going to school, and you're like, what the fuck? And then somehow the dad and the mom, they still kind of look the same all these years later, like from the beginning to the end.
Wow. Must be the fish oil supplement.
Yeah, something in that Jersey, toxic Jersey water, that refinery runoff, you know. I don't know what it is, but that's the best thing about the movie, I think, because I really appreciate documentaries that take that time. That's just incredible to stick to it and film for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And then to call so much, take all that footage, and then to call something out of it and make a story, make a movie, you know, about something. I think of another film fest movie I saw a few years ago, The Matter of Taste. which is on Netflix, about the chef. And, you know, it started with him in December 2001 and went all the way up to, like, 2010. Yeah. Almost a decade of this guy's career. It was fascinating. Here's the thing, right? So it's the front man, and he wants to be famous. And then, you know, at the end, it's, of course, all about he's the front man of his family. You know, right? You know, he's a front man. Everyone is a front man of their own world, of your own life. You're the front man of your life.
I'm a supporting character of my
of your own life. You're the Steve Buscemi of your own of your own movie. That's rough, bro. That's rough. And it's a good movie. I mean, I thought it was good. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
You were also
battling sickness while watching it.
I was. This guy was he was deathly sick, and he was sitting right next to me the whole time. Didn't have the decency.
And you look fantastic. Did you get sick?
No.
Not even a sneeze.
No, I fought it, man. Oh. I literally fought that sickness.
So now you know who's the fighter and who's the victim of Chris Pisa.
Apparently. not sure what that means, but it was good. It was a good movie. Here's the thing. So, the band's music is throughout this whole thing, and everyone, and it's their friends, and they're talking about the music, and like, yeah, you know, we love the music, blah, blah, blah. And then there's a part where they're talking about how come we didn't get more popular? How come we didn't do anything? And they're like, you know, we didn't, like, take time to market ourselves. We didn't take time to do this or that. We were just too much about the music, man. We were just writing the music and having a good time doing that. And they're like, yeah, that's the reason. And the whole time I'm sitting there in my seat, thinking, no, the reason why you guys didn't get any better is because you are fucking terrible. Loaded Poets fucking sucks. It is a bad band.
It is.
They're bad. Mm-hmm. They're bad.
So essentially, they were diluting themselves the entire time.
The whole time. Yeah. And you know what? They're a bunch of dads. They're living their lives. This guy, what was he? He was working in the marketing department for some pharmaceutical company. You know, doing the devil's work or whatever, and getting well paid for it. And
so he works with Pat Robertson.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You know, yeah, he's working for the man. He's getting well paid. He's supporting his family, and at the end of the day, they're all happy. So good for them. The music's just bad. The band sucks. He's not a very good singer. So no one in the band is that talented.
So it's definitely not Searching for Sugar Man.
No. It's not the uncovering of some great talent. It's not Anvil. Okay. All right. It's not this amazing band that's been flying under the radar for years. This incredibly technical, great band. No, it's a bunch of yahoos in Jersey that play in dick around. And then 20, 30 years later, they're still dicking around. And then one guy's like, how come we're not more popular? Because you're not fucking Bon Jovi. Get over it. All right. Get over it, dude. If you're listening, hey, Jim, if you're listening, get over it, bro. Okay. You're not Bon Jovi, but you got a cute family, so good for you.
And a decent movie.
Yeah, I think I enjoyed the movie. So I think other than the fact that they you know, decided to not address the fact that the band sucks, other than that, I think it's a very watchable movie. And you know what, the Jim Wood fella? Hey, Jim, you're actually an entertaining guy. He's actually a very watchable person.
You'd have a beer with him.
Easily, multiple beers. Mm-hmm. I can see why someone would sit there with him, and after a while be like, I want to put a camera on you, because half the shit that comes out of his mouth is funny. He's a pretty witty guy. Mm-hmm. It's just the other shit that comes out of his mouth is just that.
He just chose the wrong artistic form to be.
Yeah. He could have found another way. He does have talents that could have been mined in some way. Front man for a band? Nope.
Missed opportunity.
Nope. And not that band. All right. What else did you see? So,
The next movie I saw was another documentary called For No Good Reason. And this is about Ralph Steadman, who was the...
Ralph Steadman documentary.
Hunter S. Thompson, I'm sure you know, started Gonzo Journalism.
Yeah.
Ralph Steadman is the visual signature of Gonzo Journalism.
Yeah. All the splotches and the crazy artwork, that's Ralph Steadman.
He is... and his work is still being used on a lot of the Hunter S. Thompson stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it was primarily really about their relationship, mostly about their working relationship together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was not nearly as crazy as Thompson.
No.
He
was
just
much
went along
more grounded.
With it.
Yeah.
He just went with it. And he embraced the chaos.
Which is why they got along.
Yes.
Did it talk about how I think they met for the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was just like an offhand cartoonist from England.
Yeah.
And he's just like, all right, let's just go. And then they just kept, and every time there was a new project coming along, he was the same thing. It was just a voice message from Hunter S. Thompson, barely comprehensible, that said, we're going here, let's do it. Fucking forget everything. that's my best Hunter S. Thompson. And it's actually produced by Johnny Depp, and he appears in it.
Yeah,
and it goes back and forth between chronicling his career and some of the Johnny Depp watching Stedman create new work.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
And because he does have a very particular style, and it's cool how like he'll throw a splotch down, and then he'll. Scrape it down.
People
or whatever.
Are distorted,
really cool.
And there's everything's accentuated, and it's very, very interesting. That there's one thing I didn't know was that he made a book about Da Vinci, but he read 50 books about Da Vinci first, and he still didn't feel like he could do something.
Yeah,
and so he ended up dressing like Da Vinci, and he would make he did his own art for his own Da Vinci book.
Really?
So it was very interesting, and he was really
crazy
into
bastard.
Yeah. And he also was very good friends with William S. Burroughs. There's archive footage of them doing shooting at a little shooting range behind Burroughs' house or something like that.
Cool.
And Burroughs is like this 80-year-old man. You know, he's been through a lot.
Yeah.
And he's shooting guns. He's like, yeah, whatever. You know, he's just like, I don't give a shit anymore. I didn't give a shit then. I don't give a shit now.
Right.
But it was a good documentary. Very good cinematography because... in between certain shots or with the voiceover, you see shots of Stedman's studio and home, and very stylized. You see dust, layers of dust on tables, on the ground, on shelving, and it was very good. And then Johnny Depp is in it. He's not in it too much. He's not obviously but he helps drive the present narrative. But I wasn't totally in love with the movie, but I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah, but it's definitely one I wanted to see. That first Saturday, I had so many movies going on, and then this guy.
The weekends is where
too.
They jam pack.
They jam pack the weekend, yeah. So something had to get cut. Unfortunately, I cut that one. But it was so we could see. Well, so I.
I think
see
you should rename this podcast to "It'll Be on Netflix."
It'll be on Netflix. Yeah. All these movies will. Like 90% of these movies are going to end up on Netflix for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely looking forward to that one being on Netflix because they ain't coming out in Regal.
Yeah, no, it's not at all.
I'll tell you that. But I ended up skipping out on that one because that shit to do. But I did make sure I wanted to come back for that Dom Hemingway.
Yes. I saw that too.
I saw you when they yelled press. And I was just walking up, and then I saw you in there in the front hustling in. I was like, "Oh, that Aaron, he's hustling in there,
I
man."
I see you,
yeah. I mean, I was just walking up to the door.
I kind of scurry. I'm a hobbit size, so I just go in.
Plus, you have to,
yeah.
Because when I got in the theater, I was behind the group of press. So by the time I walk in, I was like, "Oh, maybe I'll pop my head over and I'll see Aaron." Like, "Oh, I'll pop down next to him." I pop my head over the little wall there, wall to wall people, every seat taken. I was like. Screw Aaron. I need to find a seat. A seat at all. And then I found...
That's what most people say about me. Screw Aaron.
Screw
Aaron.
I got to find a seat. I found one. Second row. Second row.
Your sinuses probably drained really well.
Like that. But, you know, it wasn't too bad, though. I do like sitting close. Second row is a little too close, but I do like sitting close to the screen. I did manage to save a seat next to me, though, in memory of Drew Sycogren.
Yes.
Oh, that's
terrible. So the theater was definitely sold out full, but that seat next to me was empty.
The prestige films at Florida Film Festival are packed.
Every time. Mm-hmm. Every time. But we both made it into this one.
Yep.
Snuck in. Dom Hemingway, starring Jude Law, doing his best Tom Hardy as Bronson impression. And it was good. It was good.
It was good. Not great. Good.
Not great.
It was funny.
It was definitely funny, although I felt there were parts where, and now thinking back on it, I can't remember what exactly, but I do remember that there were parts in the movie where people were laughing, and I was sitting there thinking, that's not funny.
Well,
like that was horrible.
Well, that's
violent.
Well, that's black comedy. It's like we're laughing at their Schadenfreude, we're laughing at his expense, his emotional. He was in prison for 12 years and he kept quiet about it. And he didn't rat out the accomplices.
Right.
So he gets out. He's very narcissistic. And he's looking for respect and he's looking for monetary compensation.
The movie starts, Drew, with him doing a. three or four minute monologue standing there like this with his arms out shirtless, so it's you just see his chest up, 4 or 5 minute monologue about his cock.
Nice.
About how great it is, how
where it's going
places, where it's been. If it could write a book, it would write the greatest fucking book ever, you know. If it could be in movies, it would be a movie star, shit like that. I don't want to give away what the joke is at the end of the scene, but there's a nice little punchline at the end there where he is in prison. And he's talking about his dick, so.
Yeah.
And then you don't see Blow's waist. Just have to see that. But I feel like if you watch this movie, if you see this opening monologue, the way Jude Law delivers it, the language in it, not just the cursing, but the cadence and, you know, the way he's speaking, I feel like if you like that opening monologue, you're going to like the movie.
Yeah.
If the movie starts off like that and you're like, what the fuck is this? This is not cool, then...
Not going to be your movie.
Yeah. Stay away. Because Jude Law's character, even though he's not very smart... He is a pontificating motherfucker, man.
Yeah.
He will monologue his ass off at the drop of a hat.
He's a narcissist.
He is okay. Very narcissistic.
Not only does he
loves the sound of his own voice, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
True. And one thing I thought is the movie takes place pretty much in the present.
Yeah.
But they look like they're from the 70s.
Yeah.
Even as his partner, who didn't go to jail.
Richard E. Grant.
Yeah.
Yeah. He dressed like he came. He was still in with Nail and I or some
exactly.
shit like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting. Detail there.
Yeah.
Very very throwbacky in the way they were. But so yeah, like you said, it's a movie about it. He just wants his money, and also he wants to reconnect with his daughter, played by Khaleesi from Game of Thrones.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But not a blonde. So it took me a while to be like
I realize it was her.
It's like that girl looks familiar. Oh, wait, she doesn't have a dragon on her shoulder.
God,
that's why
she's not naked.
And she's not. And she's not getting banged out by Jason Momoa. That hasn't happened in years.
I can't recognize her.
Yeah, still can't. Why isn't she? Yeah, but it was good, though.
It was good.
You know, I mean, the trailer is one of these trailers where it's like, oh, be prepared for a powerhouse performance. It's going to be a great movie. Well, obviously, the trailer is trying to sell you on the movie.
Yeah.
So it kind of built it up a little bit.
I stay away from trailers, actually.
You should.
Yeah.
You should try to. I think we saw this one. That's the thing. I was like Dom Hemingway. I read the synopsis on the website. Jude Law, Richard E. Grant really was the selling point for me. I'm a huge fan of that guy. I was like, I don't even want to see a trailer. I'm just going to go into this movie
and
blind.
It played in front of something.
And then
Grand Budapest.
We saw Grand Budapest. Then it played in front of Grand Budapest. I was like, it looks good. It looks good. I go see it. So we both like Dom Hemingway. It was good stuff. And then did you see anything else after that? Did you have a long, long Saturday, or were you done that?
Last year, I saw a lot of movies.
I remember that, yeah.
This year, I said no more than three in a day, just to kind of keep myself
sane,
not overtired. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a hard life.
It'll take it out of you.
It does.
Even just sitting in a theater for like 9 hours during the course of a day, experiencing all different emotions, it'll take it out of you.
Yeah.
That first Saturday was, for me, three movies that day was the most we've seen. Plus the short films. We forgot about the other short film, Strike, the greatest bowling story ever told.
Yep. Oh, it was so anticlimactic.
Yeah, it was pretty anticlimactic. Actually, you can see it on the YouTube. If you look up Strike, short film, it's on there. It's only like 4 or 5 minutes, something like that.
Use Bing to find Google to find YouTube.
There you go.
Yeah,
because... Anyway. So that was a Saturday. Sunday. Sunday, we didn't see anything.
Nope.
Because we ended up seeing Captain America in the morning.
Did.
Recorded our the last episode we did. And then I went to go. This guy was still, you know.
I was still sick.
He thought he was fine when he saw Captain America. Came out of Captain America. Apparently, Captain America made him ill.
Yeah.
I would try to go see Joe.
I wanted to see Joe.
Tried.
I had to go on a date.
Aww.
And I said, do I want to see a great movie from David Gordon Green or go on a date?
The great David Gordon Green.
I chose the date.
Yeah.
Would you blame me?
Hey, no. You know what? The David Gordon Green movie? That's actually going to play in theaters. With Nicolas Cage?
Yes, that's true.
That's actually going to be released in theaters.
Exactly.
It's not like you have to see it at the film festival.
You know what? I wasn't a big fan of Prince Avalanche, but I love...
I think we talked about that last time.
I love the first four films from David Gordon Green.
George Washington, so All the Real Girls, Undertow, Snow Angels.
Snow Angels. Snow Angels took me by surprise.
Snow Angels is pretty... I did see George Washington first.
I saw George Washington first.
So then when I saw Snow Angels, I was expecting the style and everything.
Yeah.
But it is pretty...
Mm-hmm.
It's heavy, man. It's heavy.
Yeah.
What took me by surprise is when the guy who made Snow Angels was like, oh, I'll make Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
He, like, that doesn't make any
it's
sense.
It's like he discovered weed and he's like, I'm just going to make movie...
Stoner comedies.
I want make stoner comedies from now on.
But now he's got money and prestige, so he can just do whatever he wants now.
Sort of. The sitter didn't make... any money for him, so I think that's part of the reason why he had to sneak off and do Prince
Avalanche.
The movie
made money. Didn't make money, but he made money. I'm sure.
Oh, true. Yeah, he's making money.
Oh, yeah.
He's fine.
He collected that check.
He has a four-wheeler in his garage.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, that he tools around with his buddies in North Carolina.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to the food. did you see anything on Sunday? What did you see on Sunday?
I think I saw Levitated Mass.
You saw Levitated Mass on Sunday. Okay, perfect. Yeah. I ended up seeing that on... Monday. I saw that on Monday. So perfect. We'll talk about Levitated Mass.
Sure. I really enjoyed Levitated Mass. I think it's one of the best documentaries I've seen so far at the film festival. It's about Michael Heiser.
Yes.
Who I never heard of, but he was a sculptor who was very famous in New York, has several installations all throughout the United States. But he had an idea called Levitated Mass. And before that, he actually has a concept he likes to call negative sculpture.
Yeah, have you ever heard of negative sculpture or negative space or anything like that in the art world?
I mean, I understand what negative space is, but I don't understand negative sculpture. It doesn't make any sense.
It's basically
to me.
It's almost the same thing, but you know how like things like there are objects in front of us.
Yes.
That's space. You know, they're taking up space. He has sculptures that have no mass and no shape. And so instead of things existing in front of you, there'll be like a hole of nothing. And the only real place that he did a really great job, I forget which museum it was. I think it was
the one where the four holes, north, south, east, west.
Yes, and they're just holes, but it's a platform that you walk on top of, and you see these holes, and each hole is like a different shape.
There's a circle, like a square, cone. Like a cone, and then like an outward cone. So it looks like just a black hole pit. You can't see. You can't see the bottom.
So it is a sculpture, but it takes up negative space.
Yeah. All right, I understand.
Yeah. And then he does things like out in the desert.
Yes.
Where
he's building like a city, city one, city two.
Yeah, it's like a big, he's all about like changing the landscape of something with his art, you know. So he'll build huge geometric pieces that you can stand back, like a mile away to see how it plays with the rest of the landscape. Yes, and he's all about, they bring up stuff like the pyramids, Stonehenge, Easter Island, all these monolithic, that's a great word.
Megalith.
Leviathan. Mastodon.
These structures have lasted 3,000-5,000 years. They're still there. We're still not too sure about everything.
Yeah.
And
then we don't do that anymore. Although, I find it odd. Never mentioned Mount Rushmore.
That's true. Or Statue of Liberty. But it's not as... It's not the amount of stone required is not as...
Heiser, it was more interested in the combination of modern living with nature and where we've come from. So that's why he did like everything made out of stone and working out in the desert. That's why I was surprised. Mount Rushmore is built out... It's carried on the side of a goddamn mountain.
Yep.
That's how natural. How could he get the mountain?
But his new idea, Levitated Mass...
Crazy
is,
idea.
He has... the idea was supposed to be an optical illusion. Was to put a boulder on a artificial valley, and if you put the boulder on the top, and if you go under and you look up, it'll look as if the boulder is just levitating above you.
It's just hovering over you.
Okay. And he originally tried this out. He found a boulder in 1969, and construction equipment just wasn't there yet, and the construction equipment broke.
Yeah.
When he was trying to get this boulder. Fast forward almost 40 years.
Yeah.
He finally found a...
much time.
340-ton boulder that's, they said, 900 million years old.
Yeah, that's what they said. But I mean,
yeah.
I want to see the carbon dating on that.
And they finally found it, and they're able to finally say, okay, we have the technology, we can rebuild it.
Yeah.
And but they found $10 million of private funding from donors.
All privately funded.
To have this whole installation installed at the Los Angeles
County Museum.
Thank you.
LACMA.
Contemporary art, I think it is.
No, it's LACMA. Los Angeles County.
Okay.
I looked
thank
it up.
You. Yeah. Great. Yeah. And
I thought it'd be contemporary too, but nope.
Yeah. County. So essentially, the film isn't really. It's really a chronicle of. Us watching this boulder move, the process of getting the permit, about moving it,
which is fascinating.
Yeah, and at the very beginning of the film, they ask, "Is this art?" And then that's the thing that everyone's asking: "Is this art?
Yeah.
What does it mean to us?"
At this point, that's almost a boring question now. What is art?
Yeah. It is, and what's happening is we're seeing the state of the art of our construction and transportation. And the fact that they had to, 22 counties, 6 cities, they had to get permits and permission.
Well, they had to move a 340-ton boulder 110 miles through, like you said, through 22 fucking...
At 7 miles an hour, only at night.
Only at night.
Trees had to be cut down.
They had to move traffic signals.
Power lines. They had to make sure, sometimes I think there was like 4 inches between the rock and like an overpass.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
Hell,
and
before they even did that, people had to, walk the route with the sticks to see, go to every overpass to see where could the boulder possibly fit through. They had to map. There's a reason why it took them almost 2 years from the time they acquired the boulder to the time they actually got wheels moving to just get the boulder moving out of the quarry. It took them forever.
And it's you also see the people who are seeing that, because during the day the boulder is parked, and so people go to the boulder and they look at it, take pictures.
Yeah.
People were getting
engaged.
People got engaged in front of it. People were looking at it. Some people had government conspiracies because the boulder was actually wrapped.
Yeah, they wrapped the boulder.
Yeah.
So you couldn't tell it was a boulder. And then one woman was like, oh, you don't know what's in there. It could be styrofoam. There could be bombs in there. It could be a government moving shit. That company is known for moving expensive government stuff. It's like, well, damn, lady.
That was a very good impression.
No, that's what she was, a screeching weasel woman is what it was.
And they also went to another town who was very economically depressed, and they actually really said, you know,
that was when they were spending
$10 million
on a boulder.
That
was when they were in South Central. That's when they passed through South Central.
And this is where some of the best comments came
about
the public.
Art. Yeah.
And they're like, you know, that $10 million could have done so much social good. And, you know, is this art? Is it really necessary? And very good questions. And,
you know, but with that whole thing, like one lady was like, hey, you know, it was all private money. Since you say it's private money, it's cool. I don't care. If I find out it was city money, then we have a problem. And that's right. It is private money.
It was private money.
And anyone who's like, that's a waste of money, they should be spending their money elsewise.
People
like,
can do whatever the hell they want to with their money.
How about I tell you how to spend your money? Yeah, you
I'm
going to
take
that.
All my money and spend it on blowing hookers.
There you go. Good for you, dude. Are you going to use any of my government money for that? No. You're using your own money.
I don't think the dope dealer or the hookers take food stamps.
Yeah, keep your receipts. EBT. Oh, the EBT. Yeah. You can find some. hey, baby, here's a $100 EBT card. Let me get $80 worth of services.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
But I really like this movie. Here's another thing, is we really don't see Michael Heiser until the end of the movie.
Yeah, because
they talk about him. We see archival footage. Yeah. We see his other sculptures.
And so he's throughout the movie, he gets built up as this mythic character.
Yeah.
The great Michael Heiser who's out in the desert. No one sees him.
He doesn't comment on it. He doesn't say whether it is art. He's like, here's the plans. This is my idea.
Yeah.
Go do it. You figure out everything else.
But then once they do get the boulder to the museum, he shows up.
Yeah.
Because he wants to be hands-on with this stuff. And then even though he doesn't want to explain his work, he still has to explain what he's doing to the people that he's working with.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a camera there the whole time. So his little secrets, his reasonings are getting out, which is fantastic. Because when they did install the piece, I read online, did a little bit of research. He didn't say shit. People were like, what does this mean, Michael? And he was just like, arms folded, shaking his head. Not so you know. And then he put his hat on, put on his glasses, and he went back to the desert. He was like, screw you guys. That's my boulder. It's going to be there for 3,500 years. But if you watch this movie, it'll give you the answers. Why
exactly.
Is the boulder there?
About to say, even if he doesn't tell you what his artistic concept was, the movie really explains what's going on.
It's all there.
So it's there. Yeah. So, I thought it was a very good documentary.
It's great that they explain all the different layers of the boulder. And also wanted to point out real quick, I thought some of the best digital nighttime photography that I've seen, like a non-feature film, because everything was all digital. Like you said, they had to do all the moving at night, which I know the people that were making this documentary, they were shit in their pants. Like, oh my God, I hope we can get usable footage at nighttime. Fortunately for them, you notice how the truck had white lights strung all up and down. It's super bright white lights.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a rolling movie set. And they took advantage of that. They had a lot of very interesting shots. They used the night really well. Digital night photography is really tricky.
Yes.
That's like the last frontier digital photography.
And another thing is the state of the art of what construction can do in transportation. That's really what you see here, is the state of the art of that.
Right.
So I thought that was really interesting. For some reason, the music got very loud.
Yeah, no, I'll fix that. See, no one's going to notice that I got that loud.
Okay.
See, to us it got loud. But to the people listening at home, it stayed the same all the time.
The lucky bastards.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed Levitated Mass. Right. You mind if I go right into the next documentary or something?
Yeah, no, absolutely, because Levitated Mass is great. Mm-hmm. And again, like we've been saying, it's going to be on a Netflix Instant. It's going to happen. So
this one will also definitely be on Netflix Instant.
Mm-hmm.
This one will perk your ears. It's called Led Zeppelin Played Here.
There we go.
It is about a town in Wheaton, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Wheaton County Youth Center. It is supposedly Led Zeppelin played a gig at this tiny youth center.
The night of Nixon's
inauguration.
Yeah, it's inauguration, right?
There's no photographs. There's no concert tickets.
No physical evidence at all.
There's
what
no
I hear.
Posters. There's none of that. There's no contracts. There's nothing. There's no proof. But people swear they were either there, or they swear that they heard of it, or, or people they know people who were there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not unfathomable for bands to for something like that to happen, because that's what all the bands were doing. They would go on tour to a lot of these youth centers and school gymnasiums.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The same youth center, they've had like Iggy Pop and all sorts of a lot of the classic 60s and 70s bands are there, and the movie ends up really being about that time,
mm-hmm.
where some of the classic bands that we just know that just are classic rock were doing this. They were doing it for like the gig was supposedly for $200. You know, imagine Jimmy Page, you know, getting like $50.
$50.
You know,
even,
maybe not even that. Yeah.
Even then, that's nothing. Yeah. That's no money.
and it actually was such a. It's a clumsy movie. The editing is clumsy. The camera falls during an interview. The audio cuts in and out. It's a clumsy interview, but it's very passionate. They get some really good interviewers in
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
People who've worked with Atlantic Records, people who promote around the area, and it's not unfathomable that it could happen. There's just no proof that there is. Even some people get the dates wrong. Like somebody even thinks that they played in front of 50 people during the election night in 1968, not during inauguration.
Of course,
all sorts of different things.
Yep.
People know all the people who were interviewed know the people, they know the places, they know the times.
Mm.
They just don't know if Led Zeppelin played at the Wheaton County Youth Center on January 20th, 1969.
Tiny question.
It's a good document. It's not great.
So
like
weird.
I said, it's crude,
mm-hmm.
But it's passionate. You see pictures and posters, archival footage of all sorts of bands during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it is possible that it could have happened, because they played one place one day, one place another a couple days later. So it could have happened.
It was like right in the middle.
It just happens. And
there's enough compelling evidence that
exactly.
there's
and
a reason why this has been lore since the late 60s.
Yes. And the promoter, you know, this is during the day where you really only heard things either from your friends or from the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So there really wasn't any internet. The word of mouth was so isolated and regional,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah,
it was
yeah.
a good documentary.
How do people find out about stuff back then? You
yeah,
know? Passenger pigeon.
Passenger pigeon. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
exactly. And smoke signals. So Led Zeppelin played here. I'm pretty sure it's gonna be on Netflix. It's gonna. And here's the thing. I don't think the documentary doesn't really say yes or no. People in the documentary say yes or no.
Right.
But I think this is just gonna make it more divisive.
Just by putting all that stuff together
exactly.
without really saying one way
yeah.
or the other.
Because yeah, people yeah. have tickets and posters and news articles and notes for everything else that they talk about that surrounds this, just not this one event. And they do. They
so
do ask Led Zeppelin. And here's everyone just admits that they're just really high or drunk the entire time.
Yeah.
So they just don't know. Everything's fuzzy in details.
Yeah.
So,
especially at a rock band
yeah.
when you're playing... What? Okay, so there's 360 days a year, 65 days a year. So they're playing like 300 concerts a year, you
yeah.
know? Can you remember this one specific night, this one day, this
yeah.
one year, and this one club, sir?
But
no.
2 months later,
no.
I mean, no. Led Zeppelin 1 was released a couple days before.
Mm-hmm.
Like in 3 or 4 months, they're playing next to The Who.
Yeah.
So, and here's another thing, is they think they weren't billed as Led Zeppelin. They think they may have been billed as the new Yardbirds. And the only person who was really well known in that band at the time was Jimmy Page.
Yeah, because he was with the New Yardbirds.
Yeah,
he was with the Yardbirds.
The Yardbirds,
yeah.
And he also had one other band that he was really popular in the early 60s.
Mm.
And there is the possibilities there. And just check it out. Led Zeppelin played here.
Led Zeppelin played
here. And also, because of fair use policy, they're able to use a couple licks from some of their early songs.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah. You just got to know the legal ins and outs.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, cut it. That's it. No more. All right, okay, so is that what you saw on... That's the Sunday documentary? Are you saying anything else on Sunday?
I don't remember when I saw it.
We saw Levitated Mass, and then you saw that.
Yes. Yeah, I think I saw Levitated Mass before I saw
you saw
that
on Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I wanted to say? I didn't get to see yet. Oh, Powerless. I want to see that one.
Not
the documentary about how they the power situation in India and how you know. Have you seen
the
power poles? And there's mm-hmm. this lines jacked straight into the transformers.
Yep.
And I think it's about specifically one guy who that's his job. He illegally hooks people up to power. It's
okay,
a very
yes.
dangerous
now
job.
I remember, yeah.
I really wanted
I
to see
I
that.
I think I may
one.
Have heard something about that on NPR.
Yeah, I mean, the first time
yeah.
I heard about it was like a year or two ago
yeah.
on the news.
What was up with that?
Oh, yeah. The thing was, though, I went to the theater to go see Joe. Couldn't get in. Got
mm-hmm.
turned away at the door.
Yep.
there wasn't another movie starting, like one that started half an hour earlier, so I couldn't just jump into something else. And then Powerless was starting for, like, you know, it was the next showing, and it was already later in the day. I was like, oh, man, I'm just going to go home and finish uploading my show.
Cry yourself to sleep.
Just finish it. You know, shit happens. But fortunately for me, I did make it to this movie last night, Crimes Against Humanity. When it comes to reviewing a bad movie or a negative, giving a negative review, that can be a lot of fun, really enjoyable. I really enjoy giving bad reviews.
I know.
I like shitting on movies that are bad. It can be fun because sometimes a bad movie deserves to be shat on.
You squirmed for 2 hours.
I did it. I sat through it, right?
Yeah.
77 minutes, something like that. It was a short movie, thank God. But there's a difference between, you know, shitting on, you know, like a Marvel movie, you know, which I enjoy doing.
Just because, so
because geeks love them so much and they're easy to shit on because they're, you know, it's fucking Thor. Who gives a shit? And then there's shitting on a little independent movie that some people scrapped together and worked really hard on. And, you know, they want their movie to do well. And it's like, you know... I almost don't write reviews for those movies.
Same
actually,
here.
In the past, there have been movies where I haven't. I've seen film festival movies. It doesn't have any sort of distribution deal. They're still trying to get it seen, and I don't want to just leave them be. Go out there and do your thing, guys. You know, there's some movies you just can't let it. You just can't let it slide. Sometimes, man. Sometimes you gotta call them out, and I gotta call out Crimes Against Humanity for being what it is.
A Crime Against Humanity.
First off, it's like naming your movie Epic Bomb or We Suck. Why would you name your movie something that can be easily turned against you?
Yep.
Because this movie is a fucking crime against humanity, let me tell you. First off, it's a dark comedy. Use the word comedy in very loose terms. Mm-hmm. It's about a young couple in their maybe 20s, I don't know. This girl, her name is Brownie. She's unemployed. I think she's a manic depressive. They don't bring it up, but she acts like she's very depressed. That might be her, like, actor's secret. I don't know. That she didn't tell anyone about. She's, like, unemployed. Her boyfriend, Lewis, her living boyfriend's a complete dick. He's like, oh, hey, you're up before 9 a.m. That's great. Why don't you try taking a shower and getting a job today? You know, he's like that type of over-the-top dick.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to, like, grasp movie. The problem with this movie is that it's fucking pointless. The boyfriend, Lewis, is a dean's assistant who the dean apparently wants to investigate a couple of professors at their university for being possible Satanists. So they hire a PI. But trust me, that goes fucking nowhere. Nowhere does that go. Then there's this whole thing, again, about the girl. She's having it really bad, right? She's unemployed. Her boyfriend's a dick. Her bunny, pet bunny, dies. She gets struck by lightning. She gets hit by a car. She sleeps with some dude who turns out to be a jerk. And it just, her whole life sucks. And then she's like crying about it and whining. She's like, why is everyone being so mean to me? And then there's like no outcome to that. She's like, oh, God, this movie pisses me off, man. It makes me really mad because I can't sum it up. I can't give you a decent plot summary because there basically is no decent plot. I mean, there's no story. It's a bunch of scenes strung very loosely together, and then a couple scenes thrown in for good measure. They make no fucking sense whatsoever in the context of the rest of the movie. Like, for example, the private investigator character, there's a scene where he's drunk and he gets pulled over, and the cop that pulls him over, he's like, you're not trying to play any games with me, are you? And then he's like, no, I'm not trying to play any games, because, you know, I'd be down for playing a game. He's gonna play like some role playing. And then he comes back, he's like, all right, pretend we're friends and we haven't seen each other in forever. And then he makes the drunk guy go through this whole 5-minute improv thing, and then the scene just ends. It has no bearing on nothing whatsoever what the other characters do to the overall story. It's just a 5-minute sojourn into nothingness. There's this repeated joke that they do where the main character, Lewis, another thing, I don't like shitting on bad acting. I don't. Like, they're non-professionals. They could be friends. Like, people that are young actors are learning the craft. They're doing their thing. Don't want to shit on him. But if this guy was here and I ate a burrito, I would literally shit on him because this acting was horrible.
Where's the burrito half? Oh,
because I was gonna shit on him. Because okay, I got a shit, bro. I can't just shit on command. What do you think I am?
Throw a burrito at him?
Some sort of.
That's just wrong.
I'll throw a burrito at him too. I would do both. No, I'm trying to shit on him because about 10 minutes into the movie, I figured out he was doing a Michael Cera impression.
What?
Yeah. He was acting like Michael Cera. He was doing all the mannerisms, the way he spoke, his kind of meekness sometimes, even when he's delivering really dickish lines to people, the way Michael Cera can do stuff like that. Like, this guy's like, this guy thought, oh, I can do that. And no. There's a reason why Michael Cera is fucking Michael Cera.
Exactly.
This guy just proved that Michael Cera is genuinely talented. Because he makes that whole shtick work.
Yeah.
This guy couldn't do it to save his life. My blood pressure is going up.
I'm going to take your blood, pressure down.
Okay, so yeah, Crimes Against Humanity. Just stay away from it, people. Just stay away.
I've got a movie that I think that this is a movie you can watch with a child. It's a
with a child. That's an odd thing to this.
Well, no, it's an animated movie. Oh, okay. It's for children. It's based off of a French children's book called Ernest and Celestine.
Oh yes, okay.
It is delightful. You could watch an adult can watch it just as much as a child.
It's one of these all ages type.
Yeah, and it's not even like Shrek like watchable. Mm-hmm. Like in terms of like you have the sexual humor.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very just delightful and charming.
Just good.
It's about a
like a Fantastic Mr. Fox type of thing.
Exactly.
Everyone could watch that without it having to have innuendo and stuff.
Yeah, perfect. It's about the mice live underground. They've developed a very large civilization based on their ability to chew like rodents. They've chewed their civilization to the greatness it is.
Okay.
And then in the world is the bears. And the bears have sweet tooth and this and that. And Celestine is a mouse, an orphan mouse. And she is essentially a tooth angel. Instead of a tooth fairy, she's a tooth angel. The bears put their teeth under the pillow and they get a coin.
Okay.
And the mice use the teeth they repurpose them as the front teeth for mice.
Okay.
So this way they can keep building their civilization.
All right.
And
bear
Celestine...
teeth.
Yeah. Celestine isn't very good at getting the teeth. But she stumbles upon Ernest, who is a...
he saves Christmas.
Close. He
goes to jail.
He just lives in a shack by himself, and he's just constantly in and out of jail. Police, they know him by name, this and that. Celestine and Ernest befriend each other, and there's a bears that one father is a sells candy, and the mother is a dentist, or it might be the opposite, but that's it. And they have a son, and Celestine's like, I know where you can get all this candy if you can just help me get all the teeth.
So a little tit for tat.
It's there's a little bit of a capitalistic notion to it. You have also have the class system, upstairs, downstairs type of deal.
Yeah.
Delightful movie.
Nice.
It's voiced by it's the French film, but it's voiced by Forest Whitaker, Megan Mullally, Nick Offerman, a bunch of other people.
Oh, so like they did like the whole Studio Ghibli thing.
Exactly.
Where
if you like Studio Ghibli, I think you're really gonna enjoy this. This is very delightful. I could see myself watching this with my niece.
That's very smart of them to take foreign animated films like that, and you know, people obviously it's just the Philistine mentality that you gotta roll with. People hate subtitles, you know? They hate to have to read. So to not just redub with like random people, but to find actual actors who can actually,
and you know what,
do well. Yeah.
And what's wonderful is you really don't hear the actors. Like, you can definitely tell who it is,
right?
But it's not the focal point. Like, I mean, you hear Nick Offerman, and there's one portion where he kind of does his Ron Swanson
like always he's getting Nick Offerman
it's kind of distorted and it's not prominent. You hear it for about maybe a minute or two, and then that's it,
right?
And you can just focus on this really delightful story. Yeah,
character.
It's a wonderful film. If you have kids or you know of kids that you have to babysit, this is a good film to put it on. Definitely like rated G. I doubt it would be anything above PG.
Oh, okay.
Great film.
Cool. All right, cool.
So don't see Crimes Against Humanity. No. See Celestine and...
there you go.
Ernest and Celestine.
There you go. And then the last movie I did get a chance to see was a German film called I Feel Like Disco. It's something like... I feel like disco or something like that. Something silly. And it's a coming of age comedy, sort of about it's about a, you know, a fat nerdy kid who he doesn't get along with his dad, but he gets along great with his mom. So right away, you know, the mom's gonna die. Like, I knew within 2 minutes, like, oh, this mommy, she ain't getting past the 15-minute mark of this movie. And sure enough, stroke out, she's in the hospital.
Spoiler alert.
That is in the first, like, 5 minutes. So the whole movie is about how it's this kid and his dad, they don't really get along, and, you know, they're trying to get by while the mom is pretty much brain dead in the hospital. The kid doesn't want to admit that, he's like, oh, no, she's sleeping. And the dad's like, she's not going to wake up, you know, but the whole time in funny German accents.
Yeah.
And then the kid, the fat kid, he meets, what happens is his dad is a coach of us on a swim team. So, and he's coaching one kid in particular, like, I guess he's grooming for the Olympics. That's what it seems like. Right. And, he makes his son come along to the pool. The pool meets, the kid meets the swimmer guy, and, they start hanging out, like, awkwardly, and then it's like they sort of, like, it turns out, oh, I guess maybe Fat Nerdo is gay because he, like, has affections for this other kid, but the other kid, he doesn't know, like, he's being weird about it. You know, it's like when they're alone at night, he'll, like, kind of make weird advances towards the fat kid, but then, like, the next day, then in the morning, he'll be like, no, man, nothing happened last night, I don't know what you're talking about, but in funny German accent. So it's about one kid just trying to come to terms with his own, his coming of age life. And yes, he happens to be gay. And then his first experience with that is with some kid who struggling with the same thing, but in a much more closed manner and hating on it to the point where it's like he's trying to turn his back on it at the same time. You know, he's going to be one of these guys who's like 40 years old, twice married and divorced, and then finally he comes out.
He's
finally,
you know what? I'm just gay.
Oh, it feels so much better to come out. You know, you should have done that when you were 15 and that fat kid with the pimples was trying to kiss on your neck. I mean, yeah, it wasn't. He's not a good looking kid either. So I can see why he would be at that point like, no, I'm not gay. Not right now. You know, I'll be gay for some other dude who looks a lot better than you. That's for sure. But it's an okay movie. It's all right. It's funny. The whole disco thing is about this guy who I think is a real musician. His name's Christian Stephen, Stiefen. But it was hard. He calls he's billed as himself, but he really does do like modern disco. And he has a song called I Feel Like Disco, and he looks like Paul Rudd doing the disco character. He looks like Paul Rudd doing Disco Stew, but with long hair instead of an afro.
Okay.
So that's why I'm like, is this guy even real?
Well, now we know who's going to do Disco Stew in the live-action Simpsons.
Yeah. Or who's going to play Christian Stiffen in the American remake of I Feel Like Disco, which will be turned into I feel like a rock and roll.
I feel like reggaeton.
I feel like a reggaeton. That'd be the Puerto Rican remake.
Yes.
God, that movie's going to be awful. It's okay. It's, you know, it's funny. It has its moments. It's tender. It is, like, a little different how it is. It throws in the whole gay thing because, you know, it's not like a lot of coming-of-age stories take that slant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like it when the movie is over. You know, there's specifically, there's also gay cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And those movies are, like, half the time that shit feels like it's just softcore porn. Like, why are these movies even...
Mm-hmm.
You know, but this is not like that at all. Yeah. It's more like it's
about the symptoms. And
it's universal truths, like, where it doesn't matter gay, straight, whatever.
Yeah.
It's we've all been down these paths, you know. So it's pretty good. I feel like disco. I feel like it's gonna be a little harder for people to see. It's a thoroughly German film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll be on the Netflix. It might have to be something where, you know, Amazon Prime, or
you may have to get the disc version.
iTunes.
Like Netflix.
Yeah, I might have to get the disc version. People still.
But
do
my
that.
Question, Chris, is do you feel like disco?
When the movie was over, I have to admit I did not feel like disco.
Okay.
The music was okay. I love the Bee Gees. We have a Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, but I didn't.
Okay.
I felt like a schnitzel.
Who doesn't feel like a schnitzel?
Doesn't feel like a nut.
All the joys got nuts.
All right, so those are all the movies that I saw. So, you got any more? What do you got?
I've got two more, but I'm just going to talk about one more.
All right, which one?
Pictures and Words.
Okay.
Starring Clive Owen.
Clive Owen. Yes.
This was not a good movie.
No.
Clive Owen is an alcoholic English teacher at a hoity-toity private
yes,
school.
Yes, he is. But what is he doing in this movie? I'm sorry.
He plays opposite of a art teacher who's new to this private school.
Uh-huh.
And she has rheumatoid arthritis. And if you're not familiar with rheumatoid arthritis,
that's like crippling stuff. Yep.
Yes, it really plays with your joints. Yeah. It's an autoimmune deficiency for your joints and stuff like that. And she's struggling with that. She's respected in the art community. Mm-hmm. And he kind of likes her and this and that. His career, he might get fired from his job from just complacency. Mm-hmm. He kind of likes her. And he kind of starts a war between them, words and pictures. It's like, which art form is better?
Huh.
And when that comes up, I'm just like, well, that's bullshit, because they're all equal.
Yeah.
They all do different things. And it's not just words and pictures. There's also music.
Right.
There's all sorts of different forms of art.
Well, does the movie go down that path by the end? Do they acknowledge that, or do they stick with words or pictures the whole time?
Not they stick with words and pictures. I mean, music is in there because they do listen to music, but they don't say, oh yeah, there's these other forms of art.
Yeah.
It's not cliche. It's a very, you know, the romance in it is cliche.
Mm-hmm.
How they go about it, not so much. You know, it's like, will they, won't they get together? Like, who's going to win? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just that a part of it is just vomit-inducing.
Right.
And there's a few students in here that you kind of get close to because they are a part of... here's another thing. The students are actually in both classes. So they end up becoming soldiers. So they're both fighting for and against both sides. And we tend to see some of the artists... we see how both words and images can affect these students and these people,
mm-hmm.
Both on both sides, elation as well as depression,
mm-hmm.
Embarrassment, humility, humiliation, and but it was just bad. Like, I just...
Sounds interesting.
It does sound very interesting, yeah, even though, you know, your argument about how it's not acknowledging other pieces of art is very valid, it sounds like. It does sound like a pretty interesting concept, though. Like you said, not a cliche.
It's a premise that I've never seen before, but the way they present it is cliche. It's just, you know... I mean, you can just tell, all right, those two, they're going to fuck.
Yeah. Well, we got Clive Owen in there, alcoholic or not.
And no spoiler alert.
He's fucking someone.
Yeah, yes, I mean, if you've seen The Office, if you've seen any romantic comedy... in the last 20 years, you know it's going to happen.
Yeah, they're all the same, right? It's ridiculous. That brings us to the end, huh?
Yeah. And I have two more. Tomorrow, I'm going to see a couple more films tomorrow, maybe a little bit on Friday, and then I have a weekend the rest of the... Or I have a wedding the rest of the weekend.
Oh, so you're done on Friday.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I haven't even... Tomorrow, we're going to plan on seeing... I want to see The Double. Richard Ayoade's Ayoade's The Double with Michael Cera.
Yep.
And then Doomsday's. Plays that night. I'm going to try to see both of them tomorrow, which is going to be brutal because I'm working all day tomorrow. See both movies, get up early next
I'm only going to be able to see one of them. I can't see the late one.
You want to see the late one?
Well, I've got another date at night. Same girl.
Look at this guy. That's on.
And then
you know what? I haven't figured out anything past tomorrow. So my Friday, Saturday, Sunday for the film festival is still totally open.
Excellent.
We're still going to figure that out.
Yeah.
But all right. Hey, Aaron, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the sweet tea.
Yeah, man.
Hey, man. Our Good pleasure. Welcome, CinemaFunk.com. Mm-hmm. Please go there. Follow him on Twitter @CinemaFunk. Anywhere else you want people to get at you?
Facebook, Google+. Just type in CinemaFunk. You'll find me.
Google that shit.
And once again, thank you for having me. This is my third time, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Or fourth time. This is the bonus episode.
You've done two episodes and then two Florida Film Fest now.
When I'm on, can we call them bogus episodes?
This week's bogus episode.
Sure.
Starring Aaron the Vice Bag.
And instead of numbering it, can you do like a negative numbering system? Like -1, -2?
I don't know about
I'm asking too much, aren't I?
I don't know about changing all the numbers.
Right there.
Numbers. I mean, I got iTunes and stuff to worry about here. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for downloading the show. Drew, where can people find you on the internet?
At Antihero419, Instagram and Twitter.
In the doctor's office.
And at the doctor's office.
And doctor's office, yes.
If you need those scripts, yo. Hit me up on Twitter @IamChrisCrespo. Hit the show up @CrespoDiso. Facebook.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Instagram.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. ChrisCrespo.com.
He's everywhere.
And we are out of here. I just had to.